Person hit was injured, but not badly. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News Radio.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. So glad that you've joined us for the program today. As you know, if you've listened to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast very often, you know that this is Worldview Wednesday, and we're joined in the first half of the program by someone from World Magazine, and we'll do that again today. In fact, we're going to bring together both aspects of the program today in order to discuss some of the comments that were made just recently by both of the two presidential candidates. Of course, President Barack Obama in his comments, and also Governor Mitt Romney in his comments. There's been two sets of comments that have come out, gotcha type of comments that are there. But I don't know if we actually needed the gotcha comments per se. I don't think that they actually revealed anything new about the candidates per se. I think that we could already see this in some of the statements that they had made up until this point, and the way that they've been running their campaign and structured their campaign. And so I think that these things just brought the discussion back to the surface. And in one way, I'm very glad that it did, because I think that this is really what the core debate should be about. There are two completely different philosophies here that are being discussed that we're going to be voting on in less than 50 days. And so I think that it's very important that we understand clearly what these two philosophies are and what they lead to. You know, what will the development of these philosophies through the policies that are implemented, what does that look like then in our society? What happens? And so let me go ahead at the top of the program. We're going to play both of these two comments. And then I'm going to be joined by Jamie Dean, the news editor for World Magazine. She's been following the campaigns very carefully. I want to talk to her about did we see these two doctrines that are, shown through, revealed to us through these comments, did we actually see those at the conventions recently? Did we see elements of that in these conventions? So we'll talk about that. And then in the second half of the program today, we'll be joined by Kevin Jackson. Kevin is has a website called The Black Sphere. He's also got a book out, a couple of books out, and we'll be talking to him about the books that he has. And he's talking about whether or not Barack Obama is good for the black community. He's got a book out called The Big Black Lie, and he's been speaking a lot about this. He's a conservative, a black conservative, and he's been speaking about these issues. So we want to get his take on what Romney said in his comments specifically versus what Barack Obama has been talking about, and let him tell us, has this been really good for minorities in general, who probably fall most often into those categories that Romney was talking about in his speech. Let's go ahead and listen to this is Governor Romney first, and then we'll, since this was the one that came up first in the news cycle, and then we'll go ahead and listen to Barack Obama's comments, and then we'll bring Jamie Dean into the discussion.
There are 47% of the people who will vote for the president no matter what. All right, there are 47% who are with him, who are dependent upon government, who believe that they are victims, who believe that government has a responsibility to care for them, who believe that they're entitled to health care, to food, to housing, to you name it. But that's an entitlement, and government should give it to them. And they will vote for this president no matter what. And I mean, the president starts off with 48, 49, 48. He starts off with a huge number. The Americans pay no income tax. So our message of low taxes doesn't connect. And you'll be out there talking about tax cuts for the rich. I mean, that's what they sell every 4 years. And so my job is not to worry about those people. I'll never convince them that they should take personal responsibility and care for their lives. What I have to do is convince the 5 to 10% in the center that are independent, that are thoughtful, that look at voting one way or the other, depending upon, in some cases, emotion, whether they like the guy or not.
Okay, there's the first comment, 47%. He used the word entitlement mentality. Victims see themselves as victims. The message of low taxes is not going to connect with them. He also used the phrase personal responsibility, pointing to, you know, there's a kind of a mentality of dependency and somebody else is going to take care of me, that idea. So there's the first one, and here's the second one by Barack Obama.
Let me just close by saying, as we think about the policy research surrounding the issues that I just named, policy research for the working poor, broadly defined, I think that what we're going to have to do is somehow resuscitate the notion that government action can be effective at all. There has been a systematic, I don't think it's too strong to call it a propaganda campaign, against the possibility of government action and its efficacy. And I think some of it has been deserved. Chicago Housing Authority has not been a model of good policy making, and neither necessarily have been the Chicago Public Schools. What that means then is that as we try to resuscitate this notion that we're all in this thing together, leave nobody behind, we do have to be innovative in thinking what are the delivery systems that are actually effective and meet people where they live. And my suggestion, I guess, would be that the trick, this is one of the few areas where I think there are technical issues that have to be dealt with as opposed to just political issues. I think the trick is figuring out how do we structure government systems that pool resources and hence facilitate some redistribution, because I actually believe in redistribution, at least at a certain level, to make sure that everybody's got a shot.
Okay, there you saw in the president's comments, policies concerning the working poor. He highlights government action, says that there's an orchestrated campaign against it. This was many years ago that he was speaking about this, and there was a movement about limited government, smaller government going on during that time. He says some of it is deserved because the data isn't very good, you know, that's coming in from this idea of government action, the school system he talks about there and other things in Chicago. He says, speaks about the trick is, you know, to structure government systems in a certain way. And then he says, of course, that he believes in the redistribution, at least at some level. So there you have that. I mean, very clear, I think, distinct lines are being drawn. Let's go ahead and bring Jamie Dean into our discussion now. Jamie Dean is the news editor for World Magazine. Jamie, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Thanks, Kevin. It's good to be here.
Well, Jamie, in light of these two comments that were made that are certainly controlling the news cycle at this time, I wanted to ask you, since you covered the campaign so closely, I started off by saying that this is really, in some way, it's not anything new. It's been kind of hidden behind the scenes a little bit under these other this other narrative that they've been trying to spin on both sides. But really, many of these items came out during the two conventions. Would you agree?
Oh, definitely. I do agree. You know, I think that a lot of conservatives, a day after this video with Romney has come out, would say that, you know, he probably could have been more precise in his language when using this 47% number. I mean, we should acknowledge that that number would include people like maybe senior citizens who don't earn enough money now to pay the federal income tax. Some of those are probably Romney supporters. It would include some other people like that. So, you know, I think that's where Democrats are really going to attack Romney right now. But the bigger point behind his comment is that we are living in a country that is becoming an entitlement society. I mean, our expenditures to entitlements have exploded over the last few decades. And I think we saw that point being made at the convention, that at both conventions, really, the Republicans saying we are headed in a direction that is unsustainable and we need to do something to stop it. And then at the Democratic convention with this idea that we just heard the president speaking of redistribution, we heard that over and over again with every speech, that we're all in this together. But taking that idea to mean we all have a common pot to some degree, and that some people have to pay more so that others can have what they have, and all of those things. I mean, very much, you know, beating up on corporate America, really lampooning people who happen to be wealthy. I mean, it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And some of those people were very wealthy that were doing that, which was kind of interesting. I mean, these are two worldviews that have just now we finally get the chance to talk about these two things. I don't think either candidate would prefer these to be the quotes that come out to do it. But in some ways, I think you're right. It's good. Here now we can finally talk about what perhaps this campaign is really all about.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing when this first came out about Romney's comments. You know, my first thing was, oh, no, you know, here's this gotcha moment. It was ironic to me to see that they've actually had these comments for the last couple of months, actually, and that it was released on that day, a couple days ago. And the reason was, you know, the foreign policy of the president was obviously being scrutinized. It was before our eyes in livid colors as we're watching the American flag being burned across the globe in a number of different areas. And it was highlighting, we had just heard that the Libyan government had said that, no, we met with American officials and warned them about this attack. It was on that day then that this was released. And I hate to be cynical, but I don't think it was a coincidence that it happened to be released on that particular day. It seemed to be being held back for the right moment, and it certainly switched the discussion that was taking place. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the news organization or the magazine that released this video is Mother Jones, which is an unabashedly liberal magazine. I mean, they would make no bones about that, and they've written lots of stories attacking Romney over the last year. They've actually had this video since May, so they've actually had it for 4 months. I believe they said someone gave them the video on May 19th. So they've had it for a long time. They were probably planning to hold it all this time and maybe release it in October, have an October surprise, that kind of thing. It's impossible to know exactly when they plan to do it. But this was an extremely convenient moment to do it, to take the attention away from a very serious foreign policy crisis. And now no one's talking about that. We're not talking about whether Marines are armed and guarding our embassies around the world. We're not talking about whether we knew about attacks happening on our embassies in advance. We're talking about a video that someone shot at a fundraiser 4 months ago. So, I would be surprised if Mother Jones even denied that this was pretty well planned and timed.
Mm-hmm. And one of the other issues, of course, that was related to that foreign policy debacle that's taking place was with Benjamin Netanyahu as well, that we get word that the president is only attending less than half of his security briefings that he receives on a daily basis. Then we also get word that he's of an unwillingness to meet with Benjamin Netanyahu at a time, of course, when the Islamic world is exploding and Iran seems to be going, you know, full boat towards nuclear weapons, and yet he's willing to meet with David Letterman, he's willing to meet with Beyonce, he's willing to meet with Jay-Z, you know, these types of campaign-type things, and yet the serious matter of meeting with our closest ally in the region as these things are escalating gets shoved off to the back burner. So that was part of the story as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I believe the day that the crisis in the Middle East began unfolding, I mean, the president was doing fundraisers, I think in Las Vegas, if I have that. I should probably check that, but I believe that's right.
You're right. You are right.
Yeah, and so, you know, and maybe it was on the schedule, maybe he had to do it. I don't know, but you're right. I mean, where we prioritize our time says everything about what's important to us. And, you know, I think that you can't really underscore that point more. And what the way we spend our time also sends a message to the rest of the world about what's important to us. So I think it's certainly sending a message to Israel about what's important to us at a time when Israel is really facing down the possibility of Iran getting a nuclear weapon. I mean, we are seeing a very serious potential crisis, unfolding every moment there. And when we're talking very little about that, we're hearing very little about what our reaction would be or how we would be involved in that. And you wonder what would happen in a situation where if Israel did a preemptive strike, what would we do? I mean, are we talking about this at all? I don't hear that being discussed. And so it is disconcerting, I think, at home and abroad.
Also, one more element was involved during that time as well. We had also, speaking about gotcha moments, the mainstream media had been caught scripting questions for Romney at his first press release coming out after the attacks in Libya. And so we catch them on tape coordinating their efforts so that they can kind of ask, and I think they asked the question seven times then we saw afterwards, trying to put the blame on Romney, shift the focus away from the failed foreign policy of the president, and shift the focus to Romney's initial reaction, which I think was absolutely correct, and I think it was proven to be correct by the fact that the White House themselves tries to distance themselves from the initial statements that were made out of Cairo's U.S. embassy. So we caught them during that time as well. So that was also taking place. It's interesting now that a gotcha moment caught on tape has now been used to replace that story that was in the media as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's no surprise that this is happening. I think it happens so often in races where conservative candidates are running. I think we're always sort of surprised at how much bolder it gets every time. I mean, I tell you, at the GOP convention, one of the groups that was there was a conservative group called the Media Research Center, which you've probably heard of, out of Washington, that sort of tracks how the media is handling election coverage and other things as well. And they have found an overwhelming bias towards Obama in the media this time as in the last time. In fact, a person who I met there who was working with the group gave me this T-shirt that said "Journalists for Obama, established 2007.
Oh,
yeah, and it was kind of funny and kind of true.
Mm-hmm.
That you might as well wear it on your sleeve because it's just so obvious. And there are organizations that are more conservative than others and more liberal than others, but we're talking about mainstream media organizations that still claim to be objective, that just in a situation like what you're talking about, scripting questions in this particular way just blows out any idea of objectivity, just blows it right out the window.
Well, I think you're being a little bit too hard on them because we saw very clearly that they did press the president very strongly on the issue of what type of Mexican food he likes. And they did ask him, right out, if he had superpowers, what type of a superhero or superpowers would he like to have? These are vital questions that we need to know about the president. So you may be being just a little bit too harsh on the media.
That's true. I mean, the Superman versus Spider-Man debate could get you in a lot of trouble. So forgive me if I am being too hard there.
That's why I say that this could be a real golden opportunity for Romney, because all of this is the context of what's been taking place. Although Romney may have been saying these things basically, as we mentioned, maybe not in such the bold and bald terms that he did at this this gathering, but basically saying the same things. The media certainly hasn't been focused on that. They've been focused on his wife's horse and on how much money he has and his time at Bain Capital. So I say that this is a golden moment because now it's being thrust up into the major news cycle. Now he has an opportunity to clearly draw the distinctions between the two philosophies. There is plenty of data to talk about the destructive nature of Obama's philosophy, data such as the exploding number of people on the dole, the government dole through welfare programs and disability programs and all sorts of government-related programs, Social Security waste and, you know, fraud that's taking place and so forth. So there's plenty of data to back it up. But I think it also is a golden opportunity for Romney to then solidify his conservative base, because up until now, you know, it's still been we're voting for Romney because we're voting against Obama. And this will give him the opportunity to engage his conservative base to say, no, we're voting for Romney because he has finally articulated conservative principles. Would you agree?
Yes, and I think that is the key, the articulating the conservative principles. That's the key for him. I mean, you know, a lot of the Republican convention was about how we are against Obama. It wasn't as much about what we should do going forward. And I think that has been a weakness for the Romney campaign. For voters that he needs to get, with independent voters, moderate voters, who maybe would be willing to vote for Romney, maybe they're not so sure exactly what he would do to move us away from the status quo. His plans are out there. He has talked about some things. He hasn't been really able to crystallize that in a way that's getting across, I don't think, yet. And so this is a moment to not only continue to say, hey, here's where the opposition's worldview will lead us, an unsustainable path that is really disastrous for this country, but also here's what we do to begin to get out of that. It's not an overnight fix. We spent a long time making the mess. It's going to be a gradual recovery. But here's how we begin to do that. And here's where we could go, a better place. I mean, it's got to be a message not just of doom and disaster, but of hope based on conservative principles that can take us in that direction. So the Romney campaign has its work cut out for them these days to get together and figure out how to best say that message. I mean, interesting, the Wall Street Journal had a column this morning from a leaked version of a speech that Romney was supposed to give at some point but didn't. And it kind of brilliantly boiled all these things down. And you wonder, why hasn't he given that speech yet?
Mm-hmm.
Bring it out. Dust it off. Give it. This is definitely his moment. And we'll just see if he can handle it.
Mm-hmm. And by comparison, then, we saw at the Democratic convention, you know, not this emphasis on you built it, not this emphasis on self-reliance and personal responsibility, but we saw a doubling down on that the government is the solution. There was unions were highlighted during that convention. There was contraceptives, but not only contraceptives, but that the government should be supplying people with contraceptives. They have Sandra Flux up there at the, speaking at the convention, which is supposed to be a privilege, you know, for people that have done a tremendous amount of work for the party. And, you know, she just appears on the scene and suddenly has this speaking role there. Also, we saw this idea of government-funded abortion, paying for abortion, taxpayer-funded abortion, added to the platform of the Democratic Party. So it was basically a doubling down on the government, that we need a domestic policy of dependency upon the government. Would you agree?
Well, I really would. And in the president's speech on the last night of the convention, he did give something that sounded, I mean, I hate to say it this way, it was a little bit of a throwaway line when he said, you know, I'm not saying that churches and charities aren't important, but still, it kind of came back to, we're all in this together, we all have to do this together. And it really plays on this sense of national unity that is a very American idea, but then it twists it into what we've been talking about, this idea not that Americans come together and help each other, but that the government really comes in and does everything for us, down to birth control. I mean, who would have thought that this would be a major part of a Democratic National Convention? But it really, really was. I mean, I was amazed how every night, nearly every speaker mentioned this.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's undeniable. I mean, anyone who was sitting in that room or watching on TV, you could not hear that. And so, you know, the world views are stark, and we'll just have to see, you know, which way Americans go. I mean, the thing is, you can't convince people if they already have this worldview, if this is already settled. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be interesting to see just how it all shakes out.
Well, I think that the American people will respond if he articulates it correctly, because I do think that there is an underlying feeling of, wait a second, there's more and more people who are working that are paying now, that are now responsible for paying for more and more people who are not. And I don't think that the American people are happy with that way that they understand that when somebody needs help, that we want to be able to help them. They understand that. But they feel that this has gone way beyond that, that there are a lot of people that are just living off of the dole that could be working, and that this thing needs to be corrected, and it's unsustainable in its current form. So I think it's going to resonate with the basic beliefs of the American people, but it needs to be articulated, and we'll see if candidate Romney is able to do that. Jamie, thank you very much for joining us today. We enjoyed the discussion, and we enjoyed the great work you guys do there at World Magazine.
Well, you're welcome. It was my pleasure.
Okay. That was Jamie Dean, the news editor for World Magazine. And you can go out there to their website, and their website is www.worldmag.com. That's worldmag.com. And you can read about just wonderful articles that they've been putting out there. They redid the website, by the way, and so it's a lot easier to navigate out there on the website and find the articles. It's just looks like they've done a great job. They really got a lot of other pieces and things going that I just don't have time to cover on the broadcast, but they have some video services that they do now. The magazine has been revamped. It looks great. The website has been revamped. They got a college world on campus group we've talked about before. You just need to go out there and check it out. That's www.worldmag.com. We'll be back in just a couple moments.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Substance abuse, inappropriate relationships, cutting, social media. Do these issues sound familiar? How about the biggest one of all, America's teens' declining interest in the things of God? These are just some of the challenges that parents and teens are struggling with in today's culture. Licensed to Parent with Trace Embry is a biblically based half-hour weekly radio program equipping you with insight for today's culture from a biblical worldview.
Monday mornings at 11 on Christian Talk 660 and 92.9 FM.
What does it take to live an uncommon life? Here's Super Bowl winning coach Tony Dungy with today's Uncommon Life Challenge.
Almost all of us in the United States have been blessed financially, at least compared to the rest of the world. When my family and I went to South Africa, we saw that distinction firsthand. Corrugated cardboard homes, old discarded tires for walls, and streams of dirty water running through the shanty towns. The question then becomes, what will we do with those blessings God has given us? We should use our money to share with those in need. God isn't keeping track of the amount of money you give. He's more concerned about your heart and your willingness to give in the first place. Do you need to rethink your giving plan?
Tony Dungy, author of the 1-Year Uncommon Life Daily Challenge. Read a sample chapter of the new book at uncommonchallenge.com. That's uncommonchallenge.com.
Every generation, one timeless truth. Alex McFarland and North Greenville University present Truth for a New Generation. It is the conference on apologetics and Christian worldview, and it's coming to First Baptist North Spartanburg September 28th and 29th. Josh McDowell, Eric Metaxas, Mark Middleberg, Hank Hanegraaff, Jeff Myers, Gary Habermas, Dinesh D'Souza. The list goes on and on. Some of the best speakers, the best apologetics conference in the country. Truthforanewgeneration.com for ticket information.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the second half of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. Just a couple of quick program notes or announcements here, and then we'll go right back to our discussion today. First of all, tonight at the church that I pastor out in Traveler's Rest, it's called the Mountain Ridge Bible Fellowship, we will be viewing a very timely lesson in a series that we've been watching that came out from Ligonier Ministries. The series we've been watching is called Economics for Everybody, and this week's lesson is entitled The Path from Work to Wealth. So we've been looking at what the Bible has to say about economics. This is a moral issue. The Bible has a lot to say about economics. And unfortunately, many Christian conservatives have kind of relegated economics to the secular world. We play in the area of the idea of protecting marriage, about protecting life, and that's certainly true. But then they say, well, these other things dealing with economics, that's for somebody else to deal with. That's not true at all. That's marginalizing the scriptures and what the Bible has to say about this subject. We've got plenty to say about the issue of economics. So if you want to learn more about that, tonight, 6:30, Mountain Ridge Bible Fellowship, we'd be happy to have you there. We're going to watch this segment of it called The Path from Work to Wealth. How do you get from work to wealth? We'll be talking about that at our church service tonight. If you want information, you can go out to my website, which is knowingthetruth.org, or shoot me an email. It's even easier. I'll give you directions. It's kevin@knowingthetruth.org. That's kevin@knowingthetruth.org. Also, tomorrow on the broadcast, my guest will be Kelly Capick, and Kelly has written a book called A Little Book for New Theologians. So we'll be talking about theology tomorrow, like we normally do on the broadcast, but we'll be talking about it from those that are new to theology. Very simple little book that Kelly has put together, and so we'll be talking about that on the program tomorrow. My guest now on the program, coming up for the second half, is Kevin Jackson, and Kevin's going to speak to us here about some of the issues that are near and dear to his heart. And, you know, we started off the program by playing the two comments, one from Mitt Romney and one from President Obama, and we saw this dramatic difference between the two philosophies of this campaign. And I was saying I'm so glad that this has come to the forefront, because now we can talk about the real issues. Well, speaking about the real issues, Kevin's been involved in that. He's the host of a website called The Black Sphere. He's also a father of four sons. He's a former management consultant. He was involved in information technology management. I was also involved in that for a long period of time, and so I feel his pain on that issue. Kevin is also a national speaker. He's a radio talk show host out of Tampa, Florida. He's been a frequent guest on a number of broadcasts. I was watching some of his clips with Neil Cavuto. He's been on with Bill O'Reilly. He's also an author of Amazon's best-selling book, The Big Black Lie. He's got another book out as well. Maybe we'll get a chance to talk to him about that. But, Kevin, welcome to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Well, thanks a lot, Kevin.
Kevin, as you, I don't know if you got a chance to hear the first part of the discussion or not, but I was speaking with Jamie Dean, news editors from World Magazine, and I was talking about how this is a golden opportunity for Mitt Romney. These comments came out. He talked about the 47%. He talked about them having a spirit of entitlement. They see themselves as victims. Their low taxes is not going to be something that connects with them, because many of them don't even pay any taxes. This idea of personal responsibility is lacking with a major portion of this group. What is your take on Romney's comments? And then how does this compare with the comments from Barack Obama, where he's talking about, hey, I believe in redistribution, and this whole idea of, you know, you deserve this, the government will provide it to you, this culture of dependency that seems to be being produced from his policies?
Well, I think we can cover both points of view by discussing Barack Obama and the idea that who in America would believe that you would have a sitting president who is running against somebody, and the core part of his campaign is the idea that this man is rich, he's successful, And he's been there, done that. And, you know, the idea that this guy knows more about business than I could fill a thimble with is a negative. The idea that he's been married for 40-plus years to the same woman, the idea that he's didn't take his father's inheritance, he's got five kids that aren't crackheads or running around with a bunch of baby mamas, as the saying goes, is ridiculous. Romney is a success story in America. And in order to get elected, the sitting president would demonize a person who any of us would look at on paper and go, that's a great story. Take politics out, that's a story that we would want for any of our children. So that's how you look at it. Obama has created an ecosystem now where we've got 16 million more people drawing food stamps or you know, from the federal government. SNAP cards is what they call it now. He's created an ecosystem where in order to not to skew the unemployment numbers, we've got 8.78 million people who are now drawing Social Security disability. So they're not being counted in the unemployment numbers. He's teaching people how to jump from one form of government assistance to another in order to skew the numbers, and he's proud of this. He's actually proud. This is where we are in this country, and where, from a biblical standpoint, right is left and up is down, and in the end of days, we're supposed to be looking at things through these completely different jaundiced eyes, and guess what? We're there. We're looking at a man who has not only prior to his election had no ability, could show you nothing on his resume that would make you believe he should be the leader of the free world, and even after being in the office for over 3 years has shown you exactly what we knew, which is he was going to be an abject failure, yet we are fighting for our biblical, spiritual, financial, capitalist lives against this man.
You're so right in so many of those points that you make. All of the data is bad. It is really the development of a dependent society and this demonizing of successful people. You quoted loosely quoted the idea from Isaiah where it talks about the idea that truth is fallen in the street, that equity cannot enter. He's been able to do this. And while he's doing it, he's actually saying that he is good for the poor. They actually claim the mantle of that they care for the poor. But your research and your experience of working with the poor for many years, would you agree with him that his policies have been good for minority families?
His policies for the poor are atrocious. First of all, recall that the girl believed that she was going to get her bills paid when Barack Obama got elected. Well, she's not getting her bills paid. And guess what? She's never going to get her bills paid. And to go back to the Bible, remember when we had the, you know, in Egypt when the grain was short, and originally they said, hey, bring your whatever you have and we'll give you grain. So they brought their money, then they brought their cattle, then eventually they said, take our land and ultimately take us and became slaves of the government. That's where we are, and that's exactly what's happened with the poor. The poor have been led down the path of, you know what, we're going to give and give and give. I'll put it in this perspective. The two things that Obama's currently running on is the idea that he saved GM, and number two, that he killed Osama bin Laden. He won't run on health care. He won't run on the economy and the jobs that he hasn't created or anything else. He's running on those two notions. Well, think about this. The money that he gave to GM in order to save the unions, because he didn't care about GM, he cared about the unions, was your money. It wasn't his money. But he takes credit for taking your money and redistributing it to unions and saving a car company that in June, the only way they survived was they sold 79% of their automobiles to the government. Now, I mean, that's how ridiculous it is. And then the second part of what he's running on is the idea that he killed Osama bin Laden. Well, let me tell you something, folks. He did not kill Osama bin Laden. Our Navy SEALs did.
That's right.
He had very little, if anything, to do with it other than saying, yeah, go ahead. And I bet he did that reluctantly. This is a guy that suffers from narcissism beyond anything I've ever seen, because he gives away your money and he takes credit for what our military men and women do as their jobs. And he says it so effortlessly that look at what I did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he sends his surrogate Joe Biden out to tell this to a bunch of union people, but at the end of the day, that's the way you do it. You have your surrogate to do it. This is an abomination.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but he's starting to invoke a lot about the Lord and God.
Mm-hmm.
And it harkens me back to when he was mocking the Word of God, when he talked about Deuteronomy and Leviticus.
Yes.
And mocked the Bible. As, you know, you wouldn't want to use the Bible to govern because look at these chapters. You know, I mean, this is just incredulous to me that we're not understanding exactly what we're up against here.
Yeah, I always refer to it as both ways Obama. In one breath, he quotes the Bible. In another breath, he mocks the Bible. But I see this constantly, this both ways. Here he is, we're talking about demonizing the rich, and yet he is fellowshipping with them on a regular basis.
Uh-oh.
With all of these rich actresses and actors, and holding these meetings and the fundraisers and all these types of things. You mentioned GM. The United States Treasury owns roughly about 500 million shares of common stock in General Motors. President Obama told us that this was actually going to work out well for the American people, that it would be a good investment for us, that we would even make a return on our investment. That's what he said. So the question is, how are we doing? And I just posted an image the other day that showed that we were, I think it is 14, let's see here, I think it was about $14 billion in debt so far, on the amount of money that we had invested that we haven't received back. So it's not worked out very well.
It's worse than that, though, Kevin. Here's the thing. We own 27% of GM. GM recently said they wanted to buy back the stock for two reasons.
Yeah.
One, they said they are not able to function with government ownership because the government is limiting the things that they're able to do because they're under some very strict receivership guidelines. The second thing is, because of that, they can't attract good people. It's actually ruining their reputation with people in the auto industry. So nobody wants to work there because they've capped the amount of money that you can pay to get the best people. So their competitors are getting the best folks. But it goes deeper than that. The government declined to sell them back their stock in order for them to solve their own problems, because the government Obama knows that if he does that, he's going to show a loss. Because the day that they even talked about doing it, the stock went down $2 a share.
Mm.
Now, if they do sell it back and GM runs on its own, I can tell you they're going to end up failing anyway. They just aren't running that company the way you would run a successful company. And as a management consultant, I can tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I can tell you, because my team has worked with GM, and I won't go any farther, but I will tell you, they can't run successfully as a company without the government backing.
Mm-hmm.
On the heels of that, AIG, they had just sold our stock in AIG, and we took a huge loss, and Obama doesn't want to take two hits because it's going to prove that those were bad financial moves.
Mm-hmm. That GM is still losing as much as $49,000 on each Volt that it builds, and that's according to the estimates provided by Reuters, industry analyst and manufacturing experts. And so they are losing $49,000. I've bought cheaper houses. My first house was less than that I bought, the amount that they lose on the car.
On a car.
Yeah.
It gets worse. I mean, we've got government buildings that are vacant that the government owns, and it's so bad that the government is essentially saying, well, let's just let people live in them. You know, the poor can live in these buildings because we own them already. I mean,
right.
It's ridiculous how the money goes, yet in the same breath, they will ask you for more money, just like they will tell you, oh, your schools are failing. We're not able to educate one out of every two kids. We lose them. But you know what the solution is? Let's have more money into this failing system, because ultimately money is going to fix all of our wounds.
Yeah, that is certainly the mantra that we hear coming out of Washington. And oftentimes even some state governments as well. Well, Kevin, you know, when we look at the data, it's very clear on all of these things that the president proposes. He promises one thing, but the data then that comes out afterwards clearly shows that all of these, many if not all of these policies, have just been an abject failure. And so we can see that clearly. The problem is, are the American people, and to you specifically, are minorities, are black minorities, willing to look at the data? Are they willing to, is it only the soundbite that captures their attention, and is that good enough? Or are you encouraged to see that, wait a second, many people are waking up and they're starting to say, hold on a second, this is not working out very well?
I think you're getting a little bit of the latter. There are people that are coming out of this morass of, you know, the fog, if you will, of saying, you know what, he's not everything. He's not the Jackie Robinson of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And because blacks are very prideful in that respect. We wanted the first to be, you know, whether it's Arthur Ashe in tennis. I mean, do you want to talk about an emissary of the black community? Think about an Arthur Ashe, or think about a Jesse Owens, or people like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you get it. So everybody had that expectation of Obama. What we're seeing is the worst case scenario. We're seeing this slow, I'm going to call it slide, devolution, not evolution, into liberalism that's gripped all of America, including the spiritual part of America. We're seeing that take effect in Obama, where we're saying, you know what, we recognize that he's bad, but let's give him a chance, you know, and we're going to make up 15 different reasons as to why he should. And the main reason is, well, he's black, and let's grade on a curve. Well, let me tell you what this has done. This has created a situation where we give this guy a pass for everything. He said he would create 4.5 million new jobs. He has not. He has lost over 2 million jobs. But you know why we're going to give him a pass? Because those mean old white Republicans are not allowing him to do what he needs to do.
Mm.
Forget that he's gone around government, that he's essentially executive ordered himself into every situation that he's in. Let's forgive him. The current situation in the Middle East, what are they blaming this on? Are they blaming it on his and Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden's policies for the Middle East? Are they blaming it on some obscure filmmaker in California, a private citizen making a video? That should give you exactly what everything you need to know about Obama. He's going to need a scapegoat for every single thing that happens in this country. And one other quick point.
Mm-hmm.
He started in office, and he says to me, he says to the American people, it's Bush's fault. I inherited this mess. So I was on a plane with a black lady who obviously voted for him, and she says to me, Kevin, you got to admit, he inherited this mess. Now, she's a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And I ask her, I said, let me ask, she's an emergency room nurse. I said, let me ask you this question. You come onto your shift. There are X number of people that are in the emergency room. Do you go into the doctors, into the emergency room and say, okay, for all you people who are here now, I'm not inheriting your mess. I'm only going to take the people that come in now that I've started my shift. And she automatically started smiling and shaking her head like you made your point. My point is, we all inherit a mess.
Right.
When I take over to run a company, I don't get to go, well, look, everything that happened leading up to the point where you're failing, I don't take any credit for. You're there to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
We started this guy off letting him, not us, but the other side, letting him get away with the idea that you inherited a mess. Every president, for the most part, inherits some sort of a mess.
Mm-hmm. And he seems to have this this uncanny aspect of not properly analyzing what the situation is. This is basically what he's saying to us. He says, I didn't know that it was as bad as what it really is. Well, isn't that what leadership is all about? Don't we want people in leadership who, for one thing, they have this ability to analyze a situation and know what to do about it? For another thing, they lead people out of it. What they produce, people that have this work ethic and, you know, want to get out of this situation. But we're not seeing that with this president. We see excuses. We see, you know, this, hey, look over here, don't look at these numbers, you know, this distractions taking place. And we see them producing people that are even more dependent upon the government rather than standing up and doing for themselves. Would you agree?
You made an excellent observation on the idea that you go into a situation and you say, well, I didn't expect that. Big deal. That's like a football coach saying, I didn't expect what the other team was going to try, a fake field goal.
Exactly.
Well, of course you don't expect it.
Yeah.
You adjust to it. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. But let's talk about what the state of America is with respect to blacks and things like this, and particularly minorities, not just blacks, and why are we in this state of dependency? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're there, and people are concerned. Kevin, 47% of the people, using the Romney number, are getting some sort of government assistance, and they seem to have sort of drank the Kool-Aid, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I will say to you, there is a big sector of American society that is what I call lazy, and I call them thieves. I call them what they are. They're thieves.
Mm.
They're able to work. They're able to provide, and they will take what the government gives them. And there's a big percentage of those folks out there. But there's also a percentage of folks that are on the government dole that hate it.
Mm-hmm.
They are just like the throwbacks to the 1950s and the 40s and 50s who hated the idea of having to take something. Even though it was temporary,
right.
They didn't like it. That's the people that are very reachable. And I'll tell you another little dirty secret in the black community. Even though X percentage of these people are stealing, they will tell it, it's become a game. Government is a game of, if you're willing to give me $100 to do my little dance for you every month, I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but don't make the mistake of thinking that I don't know how the other folks live. Now, and the reason why I'm going to tell you this is, in the old days where we didn't have the type of communication that we had, you could say, well, you had $100 for that person to pay his mortgage or his bill or his car note or whatever. He doesn't know how the other people live. They do. Our problem is we don't know how to translate that into making these people want something better.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I'll give you the $100, and I know you're going to dance the jig for me, but I also want to show you how John Kerry lives.
Hmm.
And I want you to understand that you can have that life. Yes, I'm willing to give you a little bit of help for the time being, and I'll even let you take advantage of me for the time being if I believe in my heart that you want to get to John Kerry status. The problem we have is we don't teach these guys that instead of you dealing drugs, instead of you selling illegal DVDs, instead of you doing things that are going to thwart that essentially hinder your ability to become a productive citizen,
mm-hmm.
and you doing illegal activities, I'm going to take those illegal activities and show you how to make yourself into the next big deal. Now, how about you become the next Bill Gates?
Mm.
We've got to teach blacks and other people that have essentially lost their imagination how to gain that imagination back and make it realistic. Go to those kids and say, you could be the next Bill Gates. Not the next Michael Jordan, not the next Tiger Woods, but the next Bill Gates, the next innovator, the next Steve Jobs. We've allowed the left to steal that ambition and what I call the imagination from youth. So this is why young black kids only want to be rap artists, or own their own record label, or they want to be athletes. That's all they see.
Yeah.
We don't talk to them about the other things.
Right. Well said, Kevin. Wish we had more time, but our time is gone. We're just getting started. But thank you very much for writing and speaking about this. I listened to your comments out there with Dr. Keyes as well at one of the events where you were speaking with him. Thank you for standing up and articulating these things and writing these books. We really appreciate you also being with us today on the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Thank you.
All right, that was Kevin Jackson. Kevin is the author of The Big Black Lie. You can go out to his website. His website is www.theblacksphere.net. That's theblacksphere.net. You can go out there and find out more about Kevin and about the books that he is producing as well. Tomorrow on the broadcast, I had made mention that we'll be joined by Kelly Capick, will be my guest on tomorrow's program. We're going to be looking at, Kelly has put out a very little book, which is quite different from his other ones. His other one was about John Owen, I think, when I had him on. And John Owen does nothing on a small scale, or a simple scale, for that matter of fact. This is completely different. Kelly has now written a book called The Little Book for New Theologians. That's what we'll talk about on the program tomorrow. Remember this. Jesus said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. We'll see you then.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.
Life at Liberty Radio, Christian Talk 660. WLFJ Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson on AM 660 and also on FM 92.9.